Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Lunch and Learn. My name is Jen Parshley. I use she and her. And before we get started with our Lunch and Learn panel today, I just want to set up some grounding assumptions for our space. I want to recognize that we're all in this opportunity to have a very unique learning experience. So I want to take a moment to ask all of you who are present in this room and all those who are also live streaming with us and will be watching us later to actively engage in creating a brave space today for challenging and vulnerable conversations. In this room and those watching, we're all learners and teachers. Each of us has something meaningful to contribute. We want to respect confidentiality. So if someone shares a story that impacts you, it's important to share that lesson, but not that person's identity unless they give you permission. So what's said here, stayed here. What's learned here, leave here. So we hope that you take what you learn here today to use as an individual, to use in your office and in the agency and outside of the workplace. Do self and collective care as needed to remain present. So it's okay to get up to use the restroom, drink a beverage, eat your lunch, but please do so quietly so no one needs to raise their hand to be excused. Stereotypes exist and they are real. It's important to name them. We do not assume that you use these stereotypes or that you believe them, but we want to acknowledge that they are part of our culture. If you do not understand something, please feel free to ask a question or reach out to us afterwards. You're also welcome to send us an email. We welcome active participants who want to share a comment or ask a question, but we want to remind ourselves to give space to those around us to also share something. So think about how can you create a welcoming environment so that others feel brave enough to share their voice. The most authentic learning we can do is when we take risks and push ourselves out of our comfort zones. We want to assume good intent and be accountable if someone gets hurt. So the reasons, again, why we share these grounding assumptions is so that we create a brave space where we can all be together. And if you think of other ideas, other expectations that you'd like to hold us to, you're welcome to share those or let us know afterwards. And I'm going to let my friend over here explain the ERG. All right, sorry. Just kidding, that's still me. See, now I'm just making sure you're all listening. So, surprise you are. Congratulations. And also, please forgive us as we're all learning to use this room, this new technology. So if there's a few hiccups, know that it's our first time. So we thank you for your patience. And so we're part of the ERG for LGBTQ and allies here at MnDOT. As someone who started at MnDOT last year and as part of the community, it was really exciting to see that MnDOT strives to be inclusive and just to feel really welcomed. I wasn't sure. I came from the private sector, so I didn't know what I was walking into. So to know that MnDOT cares about that and that we have an employee resource group that is dedicated to creating welcoming and inclusive spaces really meant a lot to me. And so if that's something that you want to be a part of, regardless of how you identify or where you align yourself, we really welcome you to participate and get involved. We will be at the Twin Cities Pride Festival coming up the 21st and 22nd. We'll also be marching in the parade. I'm not sure if there's any spots left available to join the parade. About 30 yesterday, I heard. So if you still want to sign up, you can get in touch with us, and we'll help you coordinate that. And so again, we're with our ERG for LGBTQ and allies, and we really encourage more people to participate and get involved. And that's all I have to say for right now, so stay tuned for more from me. And now I'm back, because I want to keep you on your seat. Thank you. And so we're before I introduce Brett, and they will introduce our panel, we're going to play a quick video for you to explain a little about the They Them project. And I'm going to magically find out right now how to play this video. Or someone else is going to hit play for me. See, this is collective teamwork is happening right here.
My name is Shaker Jacob.
Hi, I'm Xander.
Nikki Endres.
Therese Wild.
My name is Jesse.
I'm Daja Timmerman.
I'm Bobby Gass.
Bobby, what pronouns do you prefer or accept?
I use they and them and she and her.
I prefer they, them, because then I'm not really being part of a gender binary.
I accept they, their, or she, her.
I don't fit
this box or that box.
I accept and use they, them, their pronouns.
When I refer to myself, I use they, them, but I accept any.
Is there any time that you would use any other pronouns?
No.
Okay.
I would say I prefer they and them with my friends. I don't mind he and him in a public setting.
Like, yo, I'm Riley. I use he, him, they, them pronouns. I wanted to play soccer. I thought we were going to play soccer.
For me, I use he, they, them. It also just kind of depends on how I feel.
I accept he, him, his, they, them, their.
If I look in the mirror and I don't like see a gender, I see myself.
Sometimes people use he, him, his pronouns for me. Sometimes I'll just like be in that space and go by he, him, his pronouns when that doesn't feel good.
Often are like, okay, but what's the right one? Like, I want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I told you both, then both are right. If I told you one, then that one's right.
Would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked what pronouns you use?
No, I actually prefer it. It means that they're being considerate.
To me, it's showing that they're taking a moment to think about it.
I actually find it refreshingly good that they were thoughtful enough to ask.
I'd never be upset. I think it's so awesome if someone's going to check in with you and see how you want to be identified, what you're into.
Definitely not. I think it's something that we should all be doing.
I think that's like the best, most respectful question someone can ask.
Can you give a specific example of a time that you were either gendered correctly or incorrectly, and how it made you feel?
I was a paper boy. And I remember someone being like, oh, here comes our favorite paper girl. And I just remember being shocked, and it was kind of liberating.
I remember being at church, and I was running around, and this old woman told me it wasn't ladylike. And I was like, ladylike? What the heck is ladylike? I'm not a lady.
One of my professors who knows my pronouns, we were going back and forth, and initially my instructor was using like just my name, but then two times in a row used he, him, his pronouns, and that just like felt so bad.
First time I was literally chased into a public restroom, like at a theater, like you're in the wrong bathroom, like by security, like just yelling, forcing me out.
One really positive memory comes from, I was working on a show, I saw this person who I'd never met before, I saw her like look at me, and then make eye contact with me, and then she came up to me and she said, hi, I'm Jane, and I use she, her pronouns. And sort of left that space open for me.
What message or advice might you give to youth who might be questioning their gender identity?
I think being queer is one of the coolest things in the world. It really is, because it makes you part of something so much bigger.
Keep going. Stay strong. You can be the change that you want to see. And you can reach out to people and get the conversation going and talk about what gender identity means.
Whatever other people have to say about it, just listen to yourself and your heart.
It's scary, but you'll make it. You always do.
Listen to your core, to the silent part on the inside, and hear what that message is to you, because it will come to you.
It doesn't really matter what you are. It matters what you feel like. It's just something you've got to admit to yourself.
So that was a very wonderful introduction to the topics of today's panel that we'll be talking about, and we're very excited to have the photographer behind the project and some of the panelists involved.
Jeff, be careful.
And so now I'm happy to introduce Brent, who is the photographer and behind the They Them project. Brent will talk a little more about themselves and talk a little more about the project and then introduce our panel. So again, thank you everyone for being present and coming here today. And I really hope you take to heart the stories that you hear today and think about how can you practice allyship in the workplace and outside of here.
Yeah.
my voice is a little louder usually, so I'll stand back if I have to. Am I too loud, or that's all good? All right, well, happy Pride Month to everybody that's here. Thank you for having us. I know I was introduced to you, but I want to introduce myself to show everyone how easy it is to give people your pronouns. My name is Brent. I'm a photographer. I produce They Them Project, and I use he, him, his pronouns. For anyone who hasn't introduced themselves and given their pronouns, that's it. It's that easy. I personally will share with you a bit more. I'm cisgendered, and I identify as male. I'm sure for some people listening, there might be some of us who are a little lost by all of that. For those who are, you might not know that cisgendered means I identify by the gender that I was given at birth. Or you're wondering why a cisgendered guy is doing this project about trans and gender nonconforming people. I'll first give you my story about how I became an activist, and then I'll explain how all of that led to They Them Project. I've been running my photo business since high school, and I'm grateful for this because it gives me the ability to do projects such as this, the They Them Project. Over the years, I've learned that part of what's needed for me to make a career out of photography was to separate my work in several ways. I run my headshot and portrait studio business in South Minneapolis called BD Portraits, and then I have Brent Dundorf Photography, where I've had the pleasure of working with commercial clients, ad agencies, celebrities, and I do specific work for fine art projects and also my activism. So now, how does a photographer become an activist? Well, after high school, I moved to California for college to get my degree in professional photography and advertising, and I did that because I wanted to become the best photographer I could. After college, I moved to Los Angeles to try and pursue a career in the crazy LA photo industry. I got lucky and I started working with celebrities, but even with that success, I realized quickly I didn't want to make LA home for the rest of my life. Before I packed my bags to come back to the Twin Cities, I witnessed California granting equal marriage rights to same-sex couples, but then, not soon after, the entire state voted yes on an amendment to the Constitution saying marriage would once again be between a man and a woman. This was devastating to me, and every time I could, I joined thousands of people marching in the streets in LA to protest. One thing led to another, and I started to take those protests quite seriously. I was running to the front of the action, and at one point I remember screaming in the faces of police with helicopters flying over above. I felt a connection to the people while I was protesting with them, but no matter how loud I screamed, I still felt like my voice wasn't being heard. When that time came to move back to Minnesota, I found out that the same type of hateful marriage amendment was being voted on here, and this time there was no way I was going to sit back and watch it all take place. I needed to do something. So I decided to use my skill and my passion and put that into action. And no matter what it took, I was going to make sure that people's voices were being heard. One thing led to another, and I created a photo campaign in conjunction with the Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus and Minnesota United for All Families. It was called the Marry Us Campaign. I went to any public place that would allow me in their doors to take portraits of people showing support for marriage equality. I'd take people's photo, and then they could put that on social media to start a conversation telling others why marriage equality was important for them and would affect them or someone they knew personally. I'm proud to say that Minnesota became the first state to vote down the hateful marriage amendment bill, and then soon after, the United States court voted on making marriage legal to same-sex couples throughout the nation. I felt as though my activism through that movement was done, but I knew that I still wanted to help marginalized groups be heard. I created other campaigns over the next bunch of years, most of which can be seen on my website. But I mention all of this part of my story just to lead up to how I became an activist and then how that led to They Them Project. So now I'll tell you all about that. About 5 years ago, my husband and I were planning for our wedding, and my aunt came to us and asked if she could invite someone to our big day. She went on to say she also wanted to ask us some questions about something she heard about the person she wanted to invite. The guest was actually the child of my best friend's, or sorry, the guest was the child of my aunt's best friend from college. My aunt found out that her friend's child was transgender, and my aunt wanted to invite them to the big day because they knew that they would, of course, be welcome and they would have fun.
Now, to really put into perspective how that conversation went between my aunt and myself, I'm going to use the actual language that was stated that day, but realize I do this to give example of what I once believed and how my language has certainly changed since then. My aunt said that her friend's daughter was transitioning, but she wasn't asking for others to accept her as a man. She wanted people to use a different set of pronouns. And those pronouns were really confusing to my aunt, enough that she couldn't remember what they actually were. She said, "I think they want to be referred to as they or we or the or maybe them." This was the first time I had ever heard of those pronouns or anyone's gender being something other than male or female. And my response to my aunt was one that I'm actually not proud of today. I told her that I didn't understand what she was talking about. I personally believe that people could be identified one sex at birth and that that sex could be the opposite from what they felt on the inside. But you had to choose between being a man or a woman. And you can't just make up new pronouns and expect the world to change. My husband was next to me when I said that, and he heard me make this statement, and he got really upset. He said, "I cannot believe you just said that. You have had challenges with your own sexuality throughout your life. How on earth can you judge someone else and think that you know better about them than what they do?" It was in that moment that I realized I was ignorant, and I had to change the way I thought about gender. I also realized I had to put the work into educating myself because it wasn't anybody else's responsibility to do so. So I decided I would start another campaign where I would show the world my process of trying to learn about trans and non-binary individuals. I invited several people I knew from Facebook to come and get free photos, and I helped so that they would be able to help me figure out how I wanted to go about the project visually. Luckily enough, there were people that wanted to participate. When the first subject came to my studio, I asked if it would be okay for me personally to ask questions about their journey to using they-them pronouns. They said it was cool, so I made some coffee in my kitchen, and we ended up sitting there for probably 30 or 45 minutes, having a wonderful talk. I learned so much, and even to this day, I'm so grateful that they gave me the opportunity to do so. That ended, and I was really pleased with the photos. So I asked another person to come into the studio to take pictures as well. That person came in. I once again asked if it was okay for me to ask questions. They told me it was, and I went to go get coffee, and a light bulb went on in my head. Those questions that I was about to ask that person were the same questions that other people wanted to ask as well. So why not record it in case I could use that footage to help people somehow? I grabbed my camera, I threw it on a tripod, and I hit record, and that was the moment that this project was born. Now, to slingshot a lot from the start of the project and how it's changed over the last year. So first, I wanted to take a series of photographs and maybe have people answer questions and have those responses next to the images somehow. Then I started recording questions, and those questions became interviews. People from the trans community started coming to me and saying what the project meant to them, how sharing the interviews was helping them educate their friends and family, and made it so that they didn't constantly have to have those conversations with people. The project went on like this in that format for a while, but I started to realize that the videos weren't perfect. There were challenges with that. And with the challenges, some more changes came. The interviews themselves were lasting around 30 to 60 minutes, and I realized more and more how all of the conversation was important. Over time, I realized that people through social media didn't want to watch a video for more than 1 or 2 minutes, and that younger generations didn't want to watch something for more than 20 seconds. This meant that I had to edit down the interviews, cutting out a majority of what someone felt was important enough to bring up while I was talking to them. And I needed a solution to this, and that was podcasts. With podcasts, people can listen while at work, driving, gardening, anywhere, anytime. People can take in a full interview and learn about gender. And that means you, the people who are listening to this now, that is what you can do, and that's how you can learn. But then what about these photos that are going on behind me here? I knew from the beginning of the project that if I photographed people in a unique style, it would be the one part of the project that would be consistent and pull people in. Sooner or later, I knew that the time was right for me to use those images and create a gallery of the project. So I asked Lush, a bar here in Minneapolis, which has always done amazing things for the community, if they were willing to host the gallery. They said they loved the idea, and they even offered to host an event for the opening. Like the rest of the project, I ended up putting a lot of effort into this. There were roughly 20 nonprofits that I contacted and were there that evening. We raised money for two trans-specific nonprofits as well. And we had a guest speaker that evening that was none other than Minneapolis 4th Ward Council member Philippe Cunningham, who happens to be the first trans male person of color elected to political office in the U.S. The place was absolutely packed. People were shoulder to shoulder at times, and you could feel the love. I told people leading up to that event that I didn't care one bit if someone came up to me to tell me that my photographs were pretty. I wanted to see youth there and families. I wanted them to be walking around and looking at the pictures and meeting people from the project and from the community, and for everyone to feel accepted and loved. I needed that night to be special for gender nonconforming people, highlighting them and celebrating them. Since that opening, I've been contacted by a lot of other organizations asking if I could do a gallery, and my answer is always yes. You can find out about those upcoming events through the They Them Facebook page. So now, before I end my portion here about the project and myself, I'd like to end with answering some questions that I'm always asked about the project. Are you still interviewing people for the project, and where is the project headed? Yes, I'm still interviewing people. I don't see this project going away anytime soon. And as for where it's headed, I've been lucky enough to highlight a ton of individuals from here in the Twin Cities, some of which I consider icons for the community and our whole state. I now hope to take the project beyond Minnesota, and I've already started that process interviewing people in California, and I have plans to work with some amazing individuals in New York as well. I hope the traveling aspect can become a regular thing because I feel that the whole country deserves this project. So another question I get asked a lot is, what have I learned from the project? I honestly hesitate to answer this question because I feel most of the time it's people are asking me for the cliff notes to be able to learn about everything that the project can teach you. You can hear through the interviews each time when I'm learning something new because I always try really hard to be honest and to reference things as they come up. Ultimately, listening to the interviews is how people will learn. But if I had to choose one thing that is the biggest lesson I want people to take away from the project, it's that it's a good thing to ask people their pronouns. It shows that you care about someone and that you want to respect them while interacting with them. The first question I actually ask is exactly that. Would there ever be a time you'd be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use? For the non-binary people from the group, the answer has always been an astounding no. Another huge lesson I've learned is the reality of privilege. How for trans people, their privilege can actually change as they themselves change. But I have also learned an amazing amount of privilege that I have for myself. Once again, you can hear me go in depth about this concept in many of the interviews, but one thing I want people to take away from this discussion is the concept that having privilege to me means that I should assist and help people who have less privilege. I believe the world would change and for the better if everyone lived by that concept. So another question I get asked constantly is how can I help the project? How can somebody help the cause and They Them project? I've spent what is probably now literally hundreds of hours putting together the website that gives everyone the opportunity to show and support and inform others, to show support and inform others. And I made it as easy as just clicking a button. The best way that you can help the cause and show support for the people who are giving you their stories is to simply share the project. Give a personal message telling other people what you learned and what you listened to, and give them a reason to listen to the project as well. I can't say it enough, and that's why I came up with a new tagline for the project just in the last 2 weeks, and I try to put it everywhere that the project is seen. Listen to the interviews, learn about gender diversity, share, to show support, and inform. All right, that's it. So thank you again, MnDOT, for giving us the opportunity to showcase the project and all the beautiful people that I honestly am honored to have the chance to interview. From here, I will introduce the panel to my right. This is Xochi. Xochi is a multidisciplinary artist focusing on diaspora of Latinx folk and celebrating queer and transgender identity. For fun, Xochi likes to ride bikes and create music and dance the night away. The next person to Xochi's right is EJ. EJ Dean has a master's degree in organizational psychology. They have been a consultant and campaign staff of LGBTQ inclusion for over a decade in Michigan, New York City, Washington, D.C., and for the past 4 years here in Minnesota. EJ is an appointed commissioner on the City of Minneapolis Transgender Equity Council, advising City Council. They currently work at Face to Face Clinic as a case management supervisor, serving youth at risk or currently experiencing homelessness, and is a former clinic director of Family Tree Clinic. After years of working on system change, EJ is beginning a master's program in marriage and family therapy next month, specializing in relationship therapy, serving queer and trans communities, and aims to continue consulting on LGBTQ inclusion in health and human services. For fun, EJ loves to ride their motorcycle, build things with reclaimed or discarded items, and is currently restoring a 1968 pop-up camper. The last person I have the pleasure of introducing to you is Miko. Miko also goes by Blaze. Blaze is Minnesota's karaoke drag king. They are a karaoke world championship silver medalist and USA champion. They are trans, Latinx, and a social activist. For fun, Miko likes to play outside with their dogs, rhinestone outfits, and go thrift store shopping, and my favorite, trying out new buffets. I hope we get to do that after this. So I'll sit down, and I think we have questions.
Thank you, Brent, for that wonderful introduction, and thank you all for being here, and thank you to the panelists again for being here and being willing to share their stories. As a second part of this presentation, we've got a list of questions for the panelists, and you can feel free to chime in as you wish for your response, and we ask that the audience questions be left till the end of the presentation. So with that, the first question that I have for you all is, what does the They Them Project mean to you?
I'll speak first. To me, it means putting people like myself at the forefront of conversation and giving us very much needed visibility, especially to people who may not be exposed to people like us. I think there's a need for it just in creating understanding and hopefully helping folks who aren't sure about their own personal identities have an opportunity to have options of what other identities exist out in the world.
For me, the They Them Project was incredibly important as a person who was living in the suburbs and didn't have a community of queer or transgender folk. I was a construction worker when I lived in the suburbs before I moved into Minneapolis. And so I didn't really have anybody to speak with about the way I was feeling, the things that I was recognizing about my childhood. And when I started seeing the interviews for the They Them Project through just happenstance, it really helped validate all those things that were gone in my head. I didn't feel crazy anymore. I felt just, and I felt free.
Um, as a genderqueer person who's 39 years old, I can, you know, remember coming out how long ago, before Ellen was out, before people talked about being gay, before people talked about being trans. And so, you know, there weren't novels when I was a kid, you know, with queer people. There wasn't media. There was no one in the movies. You know, you were, to me, it felt like being the most visible, invisible person that could exist. And so I think that, you know, a project like this gives, you know, visibility. It creates conversation. It creates access to information. It reduces the weight and the pressure of teaching everyone around us. And, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, it also gave an opportunity to meet a pretty awesome, you know, activist, Brent, and being able to, for Brent to share his story about his learning, I think is incredibly powerful as well. And it also, you know, it reminds me to be patient that many years, you know, being in a person that's always kind of had to put up a defense, being ready for people to misgender you, you know, just always having to kind of protect yourself, being reminded that they're, that people, when you can connect emotionally to folks, their readiness and willingness to learn and see you, it's still there, and there are those people. So thanks, Brent.
If you can talk about what does your gender identity mean to you, or talk a little about the gender spectrum. As for a lot of folks, maybe in this room, speaking for myself, I knew when I grew up, I knew gender as woman and man. And thankfully, I've had opportunities to educate myself and come from a place of ignorance to learn. So if you can again speak about what your identity, gender identity means to you, what the gender spectrum means to you.
This is a big question. I don't know if everyone was in the room and they were showing that video at the beginning, but something that I really liked that I heard was, you know, I feel too, when I look in the mirror, I don't think about gender identity. And then on the other hand, I feel like I think about it every time I look in the mirror. I don't know if that makes sense, but when you exist in a world where there's a binary, where everyone else, you know, everything's labeled as such, it's automatic, it's on the forms, it's everywhere, you can't escape thinking about it. But I also feel like, but it doesn't really I don't want it to exist. I don't want that social construct to be a thing. We've decided, and we continue to force and push this binary. But for me, I feel like the human being who likes what I like and likes the clothes I like and likes the people I like and really likes to get to know other people and, you know, wants to remove that barrier so that we can, you know, just all be people that are getting to know who we are. It's hard to answer in like a really short sentence, but.
Yeah, for me, it's everything. Because it's like, it's who I am. Like, you can't, when you look at somebody walking down the street without having a conversation, what's the first thing you think of? Are they a female or male? And so growing up in a world where it's black and white, I always kind of was like, I don't feel like either. I'm Latinx. Latinx culture is very gendered, even in the language. Everything's gendered, you know, it's like always constantly growing up with that, oh, you know, my mom would be like, you're a girl, this is what you do. And just always being like, no, that's not how it should be. You know, it's not, I think that a better human being is just somebody that just is who they are. Everybody, all of us have what's called feminine and masculine qualities. So why are we wasting our time setting them apart and just call it, we're people, we're humans. We're going to have both qualities. Men can have feelings. Women can be incredibly physically strong.
So why are we all stuck on just categorizing and just remembering that we're all humans? So for me, that's kind of what it means to be in the spectrum. And I'm not comfortable choosing because I think I'm both and neither at the same time. So, yeah.
To me, gender identity means a lot because I am agender, so I don't really feel one way or the other for the most part. I'm not saying that I don't have days where I play more into the feminine concept of society or the masculine concept, but one thing that that video that we're talking about, the They Them Project that we all watched, that resonated with me is another participant was saying, yeah, I remember running around church and then being scolded and told that I wasn't ladylike. And I wondered to myself, what does that mean? I'm not a lady. What is ladylike? Same kind of thing went for me. Growing up, my father, the reason why I got into construction was because my father was in construction. And he would always tell me, Xochitl, you're just not man enough. And I would think to myself, maybe I'm not a man, first of all. And second, what does that mean? What is man enough? You know, as I got older, I started to see that that concept of man that my father had was very toxic and actually caused a lot of hurt to him, himself. And I was gonna let that stop me from being who I was, is this concept of being a man or woman or whatever. Because like that's what I think that the binary does. It kind of holds us back from being the 100% of who we can be, who we are, because you're told that what you're doing right there is too woman-like and you shouldn't be doing that because you have a penis. And it's like, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, we all have such incredible potential and it's stifled a lot because of this binary.
Can you all speak to how it feels when you're misgendered? And moreover, what would be the best way to handle that type of situation, or how would you handle that?
Well, just an experience yesterday. I was at Costco buying my groceries, minding my own business, and this woman came up to me and just said, ma'am, ma'am. And I was just like, okay. And then she thought I work there, which I was like, okay, that's okay. And I was just like, I'm just going to go grocery shopping, but like I have to think about that now. I have to be like, so you think I'm a female, but I have a beard. Like, and it's just kind of, you know, it just really, you know, those are, you wouldn't think that's a big deal, but it's also like, when you have to go to the grocery store and worry about somebody misgendering you, and it's just like, boom, there it is. There's that whole, like, it's a psychological thing for me when I'm misgendered. I used to work at a call center, and I'm a singer. I'm a tenor, alto. I can sing high notes like nobody's business. And so when I get excited about things, my tone goes up a little bit. And I would always get misgendered as ma'am after being like, it's sir. Or, you know, I just, for me right now, when I work in a space, sometimes I just use sir because it's just easier. Then I don't have to explain to somebody, because it's just like, there's days where it's like, I'm just a human. I'm just here doing my job. I don't want to think about gender. It's already like, I already have to psychologically deal with that. And so when people don't respect your gender, it's just kind of like, thanks, you know, today was fine. And then you just had to bring that up. And now that every time I'm here, I have to think about it. So getting misgendered is like, it seems like it wouldn't really be a big deal, but it could really just throw off your whole day. Like, just think of like your name. Say if you have a very unique name and somebody continues to mispronounce it after you've corrected them, does that necessarily make you receptive to want to, one, work with that person? Does it make you feel respected and validated that this person can't bother to pronounce your name the way you'd like to? It doesn't feel good. And so I think gender works the same way, and it's even more important because while this person's here and you just see them, there's this whole psychological thing going on behind that. I think if you do accidentally misgender someone, apologize. I will be so grateful if you're like, hey, I'm really sorry. Cool. We're humans. We all make mistakes. Transitioning. We all transition. When I transitioned, my coworkers and staff transitioned with me. So like, I was patient with that. I think being trans, you have to be very patient because it's just like some days you just have to pick your battles. There's days where I'm just like, you know what? I'm not going to bother correcting you because I just want to move on now. So just like, you know, if you're in a situation where your coworker asks you to call them by a certain thing, respect that just because you could really hurt their feelings by just not taking the time to think of how that will affect them.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good example. You used your name, even if you don't have a unique name, even if your name is Matt or Mike, I'm sure it feels terrible if somebody, you introduce yourself, like, hey, my name is Matt, pronouns are he, him, and this person keeps calling you Mike or Mark or whatever. You keep getting called something that you're not. It really starts to mess with you. So my response is just going to be a little bit off of what Miko said and just apologize, sure. But don't make a huge deal. Like, don't hold on to that moment for too long because that also bothers us too. Like, we appreciate people being concerned and apologizing, but when you make it such a big moment, it makes it seem disingenuous. It makes it more about you, and that's just not, you know, it's not a proper apology. If you really are apologetic, apologize. Correct yourself right away and move on. You know, act like it was just any other mistake you would make because we will give you the benefit of the doubt if you're trying.
Thanks. You know, and both of my friends here said, you know, pretty much what I would say. I think that one thing I would want to add is if you're having a hard time remembering, if you don't already know someone's pronouns, you just like Brent gave as an example at the beginning, you just, when you meet someone, introduce yourself. If you forget, ask. And there's a lot of information on the internet. I mean, there's the They Them Project. There's also a lot of organizations. National Center for Transgender Equality, that's one. But there's places that have definitions, there's places that have examples of how to practice. Practice with someone who's not trans. Ask questions to someone who is not the person, you know, that you're going to be making mistakes with. It's already triggering, or that is triggering. And also there's, you know, we're already experiencing trauma every day. Like you said, when going shopping, getting on the bus, going to a job interview. I mean, there's all these places where people aren't thinking about the fact that, you know, 1 out of 100 people is trans. So, you know, if you're interviewing people, if you're working with new people, if you're out in the world, you know, you can't go by your assumptions based on how people look. It takes practice, but you can stop, you know, making those assumptions just by changing your language ever so slightly.
I just have one thing to add. For instance, I'll give you a real life example. I was on the light rail. It was late. There was two people who were very curious about what I was because I was wearing a dress, and they didn't think that I looked like somebody who should be wearing a dress. But either way, they kept asking me, like, hey, I have something to ask you. I have something to ask you. And I just kept ignoring them. I just wanted to go home. Like, are you a man or a woman? And so I just looked back at them, and I just, like, what does it matter is the kind of look I gave them to you because I don't know you, first of all. And I just kind of looked at them, and they kind of took the hint. They're like, hey, I'm sorry. Whatever the case is, you are a human being, and you are valid. And I was like, wow, okay, that went different than I thought it was going to go. And basically, it boils down to respect. We just want to be respected. You know, if we tell you our pronouns are they, them, or she, hers, or he, him, that's just another way you can respect us or respect anyone that you respect, right? If you don't, you know, you obviously don't care. I do stand-up comedy, and I have a joke that I usually lead in with completely new crowds. And it's like, hey, everybody, I'm Xochi. My pronouns are they, them, or he, him, if you hate me. And that usually gets people's attention right away.
And so, I had a good example, kind of based off what you're saying. You don't have to understand it. I don't expect you to understand it, but I expect you to respect it. And I think that would actually solve a lot of the world's problems if people, like, you don't have to get it. I don't expect somebody who's cisgendered and has felt cis, you know, that way their whole life to understand what I'm going through. You're lucky. But at the same time, it's like, I don't expect you to understand it. That I know that's asking a lot, but I do expect you to respect it. So just kind of like, I think that's a good way, you know, just to like, I feel about that too, about being queer, is just like, hey, it doesn't have to be your thing. You don't have to yuck my yum, but just respect it.
So I think those were some really great examples of how to be inclusive and welcoming, you know, respecting someone. If you apologize, not making it about you and saying, oh, I'm so sorry, but this is really hard for me and I knew you as this person before, so it's going to take me time. You know, I would advocate, don't say that because you're making it about them. And I really liked the piece about, you know, you don't have to understand, but be respectful. And so building on that, thinking about the workplace, as we are in our workplace here, can you give examples of, you know, what does it mean to have an inclusive workplace when you go into a space or when you walked in to MnDOT today? You know, what things did you see where you felt, hey, I belong here, I feel okay here, or in your own workplaces, you know, some really great examples or some examples of where you felt, I don't want to come into work today, I don't want to be productive today because people don't respect me here.
Okay. Well, so I'm going to start from the framework of being an organizational psychology practitioner, having done that work with organizations and helping set up inclusion. After, you know, a lot of years of feeling the impact of that not existing and or being the kind of token queer person who was like, oh, they can do all the complex intersecting LGBTQ identity work for all of us. And so that's why I went back to school, because I was seeing the impact on clients, on people seeking services, as well as on staff. And so in doing that work, I think the simplest place is by trying to, you know, even you can do that by starting to use pronouns. That's one place that literally will change work culture. It'll change awareness. It'll start conversation. But the bigger picture of, you know, even in an interview, right? So being a non-binary person who's had a lot of jobs because, you know, a lot of the time I get passed over, even if I'm qualified for, you know, a person who fits the norm and majority. So I've had to get, you know, go to a lot of different job interviews. And I can say that the most amazing experience I ever had was definitely when I worked at Family Tree Clinic, went to that interview, 9 people around the table, and every single person is like, you know, my name is Sam, I use he, him pronouns, and I'm the, you know, blah, blah director. I mean, so for me, automatically, I just felt like, whew, okay, I can be me here. I don't have to be something else. I don't have to pretend until I get to HR afterwards when I sign paperwork and say, is this going to be an issue? I mean, just imagine, like, not being able to be yourself. How do you go and be the most confident self, person, offering your strengths, and, you know, even getting an opportunity when you're sitting there like, no one's going to see me, I can't be myself, I'm going to get misgendered, they expect this from me. I mean, and that, I know for me, just would be like a reel in my mind, especially going to a new place when you're unsure. So, I, you know, starting from a place like, how are we talking to our, you know, new staff the very first time? Are we holding meetings on a floor where there's no single stall bathrooms or where every bathroom is gendered? You know, are we positioning staff in buildings that don't even have a single stall bathroom? You know, just little, there's like little details. People will hold it all day. I don't want to make things about bathrooms, but it's actually important. We all have to go to the bathroom, right? And if it isn't safe or people have trauma and experience that in bathrooms, big open bathroom settings, then that's a very important thing. So, you know, dress codes. Does your organization have, like, maybe they aren't even thinking about how gendered dress codes might be. There's just so many little details to look at to make sure that people can walk in and really feel like they can be their whole full selves.
Yeah, and another big thing with like being transgender in a workplace, about feeling who you like, feeling comfortable and seen and your identity and your name respected, is the ability to have a name that you go by that might not be your legal name. Because some people aren't, they don't have the resources or the privilege to be able to change their name. Maybe they have a specific relationship with their parents and they don't want that to change, so they can't be free and open with their parents. But in the workplace, when there's people that, that are new to them, they can start over, and they would like to go by a certain name. It's so important. And I have a lot of experience with like arts organizations in the last few years, and that's where I've really felt accepted and seen and my identity respected, because they will ask, what name do you go by? Is that the name that you want us to write the check out to? Is that the name that you want us to put on the letter? Because some people might be living with their parents, for instance, even at age 25 or 30, whatever, they might be living with their parents and they can't, you know, use the name that they want to use. So it's important to ask these questions, like, how do I address this envelope to you? Some people who might not have a legal name be the same name as the name that they go by can still do things like cash that check. For instance, my bank, for instance, lets me do that. We have an understanding. That's another way that that bank has kept my business, is they respect that. But I'm sure that it's a lot because of being a state organization, but I went through a little bit of trouble before got, like, I felt a little weird about coming here because it was an issue that I was going by a different name than my legal name for a second, and that just made me not want to speak at all, because I was like, well, why would I want to speak at a place that doesn't this having an issue with the fact that I go by a different name than my legal name? But we got that resolved, and that's one way that I see MnDOT trying.
Yeah, I will agree as well that there is a lot of folks that I know who don't go, like, they have a different legal name. One thing is, if you're in a management position and you do know that employee's legal name and they do not want you to go by that, you should never, never call them by that name. It is especially around other staff. That's what we call a dead name. Like, I was born with a different name. Thankfully, I was able to legally change it, so Miko is my legal name. But there's nothing more... I actually had a job that I really loved, and I ended up leaving it because my manager dead named me. And
then people just kind of would poke fun because it was such a feminine name. And that really destroyed my, it destroyed me because it was a job that I really loved going to. You know, you come into work because you like to work, right? You stay because you're like, oh, you know, it's great. But then the moment somebody just, it was just so crushing that I was just like, I can't be around these people. I don't feel that I can contribute and work with them. So just if somebody specifically says, please do not use this name, please do not give it to any of other, it's not because we're trying to be shady. It's just like literally you could really mess with somebody's psychological morale by just blatantly disrespecting them. It's similar to outing somebody. That's another huge thing in a workplace. If you know that somebody is trans and they told you, great. You do not have the right, though, to tell your other employees at lunch that this person is trans, unless you specifically ask for permission. I had, you know, an incident with that at another place that I worked for the state, where somebody found out I was trans and then decided to tell basically everybody that I was trans. And it was just kind of like, you put somebody in danger. The rates of how trans people are being murdered in the United States is real. Anytime you out a trans person, you are putting their life in danger. It may not seem that way, but there is some people in this country, unfortunately, who are not open and accepting of all identities. And that's unfortunate, but also it's a reality that just by being ourselves, we are in danger because somebody has some issues with it. And I mean, if you look up the rates of how trans women of color are being murdered in this country, it would make you depressed. I mean, just being queer and just even being trans in this country is not actually safe. So really consider that if you're ever talking about somebody, do not disclose that information at all, because it's just it's frankly none of your business, and it's not your truth to tell other people that.
I'm gonna get you the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. And is it okay to ask the questions? I know we're supposed to wait till the end.
We're gonna go to audience questions now. So good timing.
Okay. So right before your question about that, I just want to say one thing about, you know, in the workplace, especially if you're a manager or you're hiring or you're in HR. It is fine to need to collect someone's legal name and information. Like, yeah, you need to do that, and you need to keep that private. And you need to create the email for the person that with the name they want to use. You know, even if it, you know, you can ask people. Don't just say, oh, do you want to put your pronouns in your email or on your business card? That can be an all organization practice. Those are simple tweaks, like everyone can put that in their email. Not it's an option so that people who, you know, are maybe not so nice or aren't there yet or aren't ready, but that everyone does it, because then it becomes a culture and it makes it a little easier to talk about.
And that actually kind of answers my question, because you had mentioned, you know, you shouldn't tell other people if you're aware that someone has what they prefer, basically. If it's in their email, but if everybody's doing it, then there isn't as much of a stigma attached to it, maybe? Or is that, would that be a correct characterization to what you're saying?
I mean, I think there's plenty of organizations where it's still not safe, and that organization probably will not be prioritizing putting pronouns in email signatures or on business cards, right?
Okay.
So you probably know if you work in an organization where no one else is trans, it's the first person you've ever managed, or if you're in HR, like, yeah, that person has to consent.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working in an organization that's created that culture, and they're working on it, and they're talking about it, and someone puts their identity in their email signature, that means I'm consenting. Like, this is my identity. I feel safe enough to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. No, that's what I would say to you.
Yeah. I put my pronouns in my email address, so
haven't gotten in trouble for it, so I feel that we are welcome to do that here. Are there anyone else that have any questions that they'd like to ask our panelists today?
My transgender wife conformed to male expectations for most of her life, and now that she's completely happy with herself, she says she gets annoyed when people, both trans and cisgender, tell her the rules of being transgender and express disapproval when she doesn't conform to their expectations. Can any of you relate to that?
I can relate to that for the fact that I am agender and still consider myself transgender. Not all non-binary people consider themselves transgender, for instance. Some are just gender non-conforming or even just plain non-binary. It's a big umbrella term. And I agree that there is that there should be some sort of uncomfortableness about being told that there are rules, because there aren't really rules, and that's the point of being non-binary, I think, is like going against the binary is saying like there isn't just this black and white. So for anyone to say that there is a specific rule doesn't make sense. What we're trying to do and we're talking about here is talking about things that are more universal, things that are signs of respect, but not necessarily rules.
Well, I just want to say two things about that question. One, I mean, for me specifically, definitely, especially being when I was a younger queer, genderqueer person, you know, most often people that told me I had to be a certain way were binary trans folks in my life, because that's also who I felt the most comfortable being out to. Usually they were also older than me. So, you know, and as I grow, I can see that the fight that they had to go through to be themselves. I mean, I could probably I can't even really imagine how, you know, being out would be. But I also then want to kind of take us away from just talking about trans folks with that question and just name that no matter what identity you are, where you're from, where you've grown up, what culture you grew up in, what you're, you know, there are going to be people who think they're right and that they know the right way. And there's going to be folks who have struggled with trauma and struggled with triggers and worked really hard to be okay with where they are. And, you know, that can get projected. You know, hurt people can hurt people. And that isn't just about trans people. So I just kind of want to remove it just from being about that. And just remember that anyone can be a person who says, no, you're like me, so you have to be like me, or you do this like me. We all probably know someone that does that. So I just, yeah, I just wanted to kind of go there.
That's what helps me feel better.
Yeah. I don't think there's any rules about, I've never heard of them. I've definitely heard of passing privilege. What passing privilege is somebody who identifies as trans, but they look cis, and so people automatically know how they identify. I have a little bit of that, just because sometimes I do dress more masculine. And so, you know, I get passing privilege where people use the correct pronouns for me most of the time. So there is that. However, I think that's the beauty of gender spectrum, is you can be whatever you want. There is no rules. And if people are telling you that there are rules, they're projecting their insecurities about themselves onto you, and that's their business and their problem. But I don't think anyone has the right to tell you what you should look like and what you should be, because you should just be whatever you need to be. That's sad, but that's also a real thing. It's a valid issue that I've experienced even in my own transition, is just, you know, like, oh, you don't look masculine enough. And, you know, it just kind of relates back to what is that and why are we getting hung up on that? So to the person who asked the question, I would say that's unfortunate.
it's real, but it's also like whoever those people are that are telling you that, they probably shouldn't be in your life, or you should take the space away, because we're all, every identity is valid. Everyone is valid. Everyone has had their life experiences that has led them to who they are today, and no one has the right to tell them otherwise, because it's just like live and let live.
Okay, being mindful of our time, we are going to wrap up. So I just want to give thanks to our panelists for sharing their stories. And I hope everyone is taking away a lot of lessons and thinking about what they can go do. Perhaps you're going to go add your pronouns to your email signature right now. And please feel free to reach out to your ERG and we'll help you find resources if you want to learn more. So I invite everyone to give a round of applause or do finger snaps and give thanks to our panelists today who came out and shared their stories with us.